Bob Inyart Live and KGov.com, you'll find literature, audio, and video products that are a must for the library of any Christian interested in studying the truth of the Bible. You'll find essential material like the plot manuscript, an overview of the whole Bible that will clear up doctrinal issues. Then there's The Tree, a fun audio journey back to the Garden of Eden, where you'll learn about this most famous tree and its impact on humanity. Check out the Mount Moriah video. This video gives evidence for the resurrection, combining biblical and secular resources. It's a great witnessing tool. And don't forget the death penalty video. Learn that Jesus advocated the death penalty and learn how God put the death penalty at the heart of the gospel. You can directly help Bob's outreach by subscribing to Best of Bob, Bob's Best 8 Shows of the Month, or build a Bible study library by ordering the monthly Bible albums. There's a lot more, so give us a call at 1-800-8-INYART. That's 1-800-836-9278. 1-800-836-9278 or KGOV.com.
This is Bob Inyart inviting you to read our manuscript, The Plot, for an overview of the whole Bible. Call us at 800-836-9278. That's 836-9278.
One warning, there's truth of a head. It gets beyond all the headlines you read. Don't need lip service with a wink and a nod. You need a man on a mission from God. Well, not to worry, here's Bob Inyart Live.
Greetings to the brightest audience in the country. I am Bob Inyart, the pastor of Denver Bible Church. In 2 minutes, we will go to the conclusion of my discussion with Pastor John Stocker from Loveland, Colorado, on the age of the earth. He pastors Resurrection Fellowship. That'll be enjoyable. But first, this, a report out from UNICEF. UNICEF, I don't hear about them as often as I did in the 70s. United Nations International Children's Education Fund, an arm of the United Nations. They have a report on India's abortion practice on female children. And it is just a devastating report that 7,000 fewer female babies are born in India. Now listen to this. 7,000 fewer female than boy babies are born every day in India, every day. And this is some of the unintended consequences of wickedness, of killing the innocent, just like in China, where there is this devastating shortage of women for men to marry. So too now in India, because when you legitimize killing unborn children, what happens is trends come in and out of vogue. And it turns out that people would prefer to have boys than girls, and so they slaughter girls by the tens of thousands per week. It's devastating. And so now in India, according to the United Nations, a just released report, 7,000 fewer female babies are born every day. And you know what that is? It's destabilizing to a society. And it is wicked to kill your children for whatever reason. So we're going to now conclude the discussion I had with Pastor John Stocker from Loveland's Resurrection Fellowship. They call it the Res, and they have about 4,000 members. And Pastor John Stocker, he leans toward the old earth side of the issue. We talked already about starlight and time and about the English word replenish in Genesis 1, which doesn't mean to refill, but only to fill. So we talked through that, and now let's listen in. Okay, go ahead, Pastor Stocker.
Well, it just seems to me that the young earth people are very, very strict about literal interpretations of the Bible. And,
right.
And it's just like everything has to be taken exactly literal until it comes to this issue. And then all of a sudden, well, it might not be exactly as you see it in the Bible.
Well, that's a very good, I would say, Pastor Stocker, I'd mark that up as the best argument, your best argument to date that I've heard. And it's a valid accusation. And when we say the Bible is literal, I believe you think the Bible is literal also, except that it's filled with figures of speech. There are figures of speech throughout all of human language. And so when the Bible says that the sun rises, well, we know that that's a figure of speech. And in fact, Galileo pointed out, well, of course, that's a figure of speech. And today, the New York Times, if it prints what time the sun will rise, it says the sun rises. So we use figures of speech to communicate more simply to one another.
Right.
So, yeah, I believe, and I believe, I think you believe, the Bible is literal.
Yes.
But yet there are parables, there's poetry, and there are figures of speech.
Yes, there's no doubt about that.
All right.
I've always taken the attitude, take it literal, unless it's obvious that to take it literal would just be ridiculous.
Well, so, yeah, that's a good point.
Yeah.
Right, exactly. The Bible, when the Bible says Jesus is the vine, it doesn't mean he's a plant, of course. And when Jesus says this cup is the new covenant, it doesn't mean we should go on the search for the Holy Grail because we lost the new covenant.
Yeah.
These are just normal figures of speech.
Right, right.
Okay. Well, Pastor Stocker, I've thoroughly enjoyed talking to you. And if we could take just a few more minutes, I'd like to tell you why the Big Bang Theory has lost all credibility with me as I have studied it. What I've learned, and we brought this up in our Age of the Earth debate with this geophysicist, that the Big Bang Theory is not even able to indicate to scientists like Hugh Ross and others what came first, galaxies or stars? Galaxies or stars, what came first? They don't know. They don't have a good explanation for how the moon formed, for example. And in fact, you mentioned the cooling of the universe, that the universe, there's a CMB, cosmic microwave background radiation of the universe of 2.7 degrees Kelvin, and that is so extraordinarily consistent. No matter where they look, it's 2.7 degrees Kelvin, and there is a huge problem if God did not create the universe in basically its present form. Then there's not enough time. 14 billion years is not nearly enough time, not by an order of magnitude, to get the whole universe to cool down to almost a constant temperature of 2.7 degrees.
Well, I think we would, I shouldn't say we would disagree there. I would say that you would disagree with Hugh Ross, because in his book, he indicates that as they have looked into near space, areas that are much closer to the Earth, that it's 2.7, but when they look out 14 billion years, 13 billion years, 10 billion years, that the temperatures are considerably higher there because they're seeing space as it was that long ago.
Well, okay,
that's what Hugh Ross says.
I think I might be able to respond to that. For some years, the atheist Big Bang scientists, they were desperately looking for a variation in that 2.7 degrees, because if it's absolutely perfectly uniform, then it's hard to argue that galaxies formed, because galaxies would be like clumps, and there should be evidence of leftover hot spots. And so they were looking for decades, and finally they found variations which were somewhere in the neighborhood of 1/100,000th of a difference in the temperature variations. If we put an object out in space 90 million miles from the sun, and if that object was good at absorbing heat, well, then it might get pretty warm, up to maybe 7 degrees Celsius. And if you put it far out of any galaxy and in the middle of nowhere, then it would get a lot colder. But they're talking about the CMB, cosmic microwave background. And what the atheists have done, they have a huge problem. How does the whole universe cool to such a perfectly average temperature in just 14 billion years? And so they created what they call the inflationary period of the Big Bang, which I don't even believe qualifies as a scientific hypothesis or theory, because supposedly the Big Bang happened, and within a second or so after the Big Bang happened, it started to inflate wildly faster than the speed of light, wildly faster, and then it instantly stopped inflating at that wild, fast speed. They have no mechanism to cause the inflation, no mechanism to stop it suddenly. And so that's not science. That's like a hopeful monster theory. So I think that when Christians trust in the Big Bang and use that to somehow suggest that the apparent literal story of Genesis must not be true, it must be billions of years, I think we're throwing out the baby with the bathwater.
Well, it could be. I think that both you and I are in the same boat, though. I think that we are, like it or not, because we, at least I think this may be true about you, I
yeah.
don't know, correct me if I'm wrong, but neither one of us are scientists.
That's true. I read a lot of science, and I debate scientists, but I'm not a scientist.
Yeah, we have to believe what we read, and unfortunately, what we read oftentimes can be at considerable disagreement with what somebody else writes. And, you know, when it comes to the cosmic background radiation, I can only say what I have read, and the things that you have just said obviously reflect what you have read, and the two do not disagree or do not agree. And I do know this, that when I presented this here at our church, I had a man come up afterwards who mm-hmm. was really quite impressed that I would know anything about cosmic background radiation.
Yeah, that's right.
And he was most interested simply because he was on a scientific team that developed the CBR satellite, and he said that that what I had stated was very, very accurate, that there was considerable differences in the CBR Kelvin readings that they found in deep space versus what they found closer, and that was through research that had been done for many, many, many years, over a decade.
Well, I that's true, but what got them all excited was a difference of about 1/100,000th of a percent between the temperatures. So,
well, that's not what he said.
Hmm.
Yeah. So there's obviously different information that's coming to two preachers that.
Yeah, that's
unfortunately,
right.
Really have to just.
That's a good point. Now, have you heard that the Big Bang scientist made a prediction of what the CMB would be in advance?
Yes. Yes, that's one of the things that I read.
Okay, and they argue that because of that, that's evidence that the Big Bang is true. And then also there was a prediction made of what kind of elements we would find in the universe,
right.
Like how much hydrogen and helium
right.
and deuterium and so on. And I have quotes from Nature magazine. That's an atheist Big Bang publication. In fact, the primary one in the world. And from physics essays, both from the 1990 on, that those predictions were not predictions, that they were modified, they were adjusted after the fact to agree with what was observed. And so you wouldn't get Nature shooting down the Big Bang prediction of the distribution of the elements unless it was true, because they wouldn't be motivated to undermine belief in the Big Bang. And you wouldn't get physics essays in 1997 to shoot down the prediction of the background temperature of the universe.
Well, are you aware that the camp of the evolutionists, not all of them, but many of them, have become very uncomfortable with the Big Bang theory?
It's the tiniest fraction. The Big Bang is overwhelmingly supported. It is the party line of the atheistic evolutionary world. It is the party line. So Hugh Ross, in my opinion, he exaggerates the opposition against the Big Bang because he says, hey, the Big Bang is the thing that's going to teach the world about God. But we have now many decades to see that the Big Bang has helped convince millions in this absurd theory of evolution. I'd like to mention what John Maddox wrote in 1998. He was the editor of Nature for 23 years, and he wrote a book called What Remains to Be Discovered. And in this book, on page 48, he says that the Big Bang theory offers no guidance as to which came first, stars or galaxies. And Pastor Stocker, the way I've used that quote, and it's a fascinating chapter in this book, What Remains to Be Discovered, I've used it to teach people that the scientists know very little. They're groping in the dark about how the universe may have been formed. And if you don't know, if they don't know which came first, the star or a galaxy, they don't know how the universe formed. It's not possible to know how the universe formed if we don't know that. And so my point is that we lay people have been convinced that the Big Bang Theory is all solid, but there are wild holes in the Big Bang Theory that we should not use, not in the slightest, to then say, well, maybe the literal, the apparently literal story in Genesis, maybe it's not quite literal.
Well, I would agree with that. I don't know, and again, you and I are just talking about things that we may suspect, but we sometimes may not know for sure how things are. But I know what you said about the people in the evolutionist camp who are saying that the Big Bang Theory is not true and all of that, that is a very minor, small amount,
yes,
of, percentage-wise,
yeah,
of these people. I don't know. I would never say that that statement is not true, but I do know this. I'm an amateur astronomer, and as such, I do a lot of reading about, you know, the heavens and all of that. And the thing that struck me from the very first when I started doing this, and it's been about 6 years that I've been really interested in this as a hobby. One of the things that struck me that was really strange to me is that from the very beginning, as I looked in various magazines such as Sky and Telescope, Astronomy Magazine, and so forth, was that in nearly every issue there were challenges being made to Einstein's theory of relativity, mm-hmm, and questions about the Big Bang. On the one hand, they were saying that they treated it as fact. On the other hand, they were saying, but if Einstein's theory of relativity is not true or accurate in all ways, then maybe the Big Bang never happened. And I don't know whether what percentage of scientists actually endorse that,
well,
but I
Pastor,
do know on at least the level of amateur astronomers, there was a tremendous attack on the Big Bang theory and on the theory of relativity.
Yeah, I would say you have a group of rebellious astrophysicists who are fighting against the Big Bang, and I'm glad they are. But judging from articles that are published in Nature and Science and Scientific American, it has to be less than 1 in 1,000 articles would mention that the Big Bang theory is perhaps not the right theory. I mean, it is the overwhelming presentation of the godless evolutionary world.
Now the other thing that I would mention that you know connects with what we're talking about here is the new breed of what they call scientific theory, and these are some people that are obvious scientists. I mean, some of the most well-known scientists that we have today, and they're coming up with these theories is all they are. They're not science, and theory is not science. They're basically coming up with theory, trying to explain the unexplainable that can't be explained in the Big Bang theory. And for instance, the most notable one is the theory that says that theoretical science that says that the laws of physics may not be consistent everywhere and at all times in the universe. That's been made very well known by Eric Lerner in his book The Big Bang Never Happened. This is without question a scientist, a very well-known, highly thought of scientist, astrophysicist who looks at the whole thing and says, you know what, there's problems with the Big Bang. And he's not afraid to tackle that issue. Stephen Hawking, Frank Tipler, these are all guys, scientists, some of the most famous in the world, that have real problems with the Big Bang.
Well, yeah, for example, I mentioned the inflationary period, mm-hmm. and maybe most of the people in the audience don't recognize that term, but they know the idea that supposedly all the matter in the universe was in a point, like at a period at the end of a sentence, and it just overcame gravity and exploded to become our universe. Well, there's many problems with that, including that the universe is a constant temperature, the background temperature, 2.7 degrees Kelvin, and it couldn't be that constant in just 14 billion years. The heat wouldn't have time to dissipate that evenly in such a short period of time. And so Alan Guth and others cooked up the inflationary period where they said just like a millisecond or so after the Big Bang started, then even though light, the speed of light is like the speed limit of the universe, what happened was the actual space of the universe began expanding at many times faster than the speed of light, wildly. It started instantly, and then it stopped instantly. And if it would have continued 1/1,000,000,000th of a second past when it stopped, the whole universe would be wildly different today.
Right. And you and I both look at that and go, that is the craziest nonsense in the world.
Right.
There can't be a shred of truth to it.
Right. Now, the reason they cooked that up was primarily to solve this horizon problem, and that the universe is so big that even if you give it 14 billion years, there's not enough time for everything to even out the way it has. There's just not enough time.
Right. And there's not enough time for evolution to have a chance to have been
that's right also.
The origins of life, the evolution of the species and all that. There's not enough time.
All right.
Which, by the way,
yes, sir,
I don't care if there was 200 billion years, it still wouldn't work.
Right. That's absolutely right.
It's just bad science.
Yeah, right. Evolution is mythology. Yeah. Pastor John Stocker of the Rez up in Loveland, I want to thank you very much for joining us.
Oh, no problem, Bob. I always enjoy talking about things like this. The only time I don't enjoy talking about it is somebody calls me an atheist just because I say, I don't know, was it old, was it new? Here's both sides of the coin. Then somebody calls me an atheist. I'm like, I don't like that.
Well, no, of course that's not true.
Yeah, right.
But I do think there's tremendous reason to take the account just as it reads. And boy, what a powerful argument we then have against the godless worldview.
Yeah, and we never even were able to get into all of the things I talked about, the fossil stratas and the dinosaur tracks and man's all at on the same level and trees standing upright and all of that. We never got into that, and that's all good conversation for a young Earth.
It sure is, and I will relate that to the audience.
All right.
Thank you so much, Pastor Stocker.
Thanks, Bob.
Okay, bye-bye. I appreciate that. We were a little bit imposing on the pastor's time because we went over the time of the show. That's why we aired this over two programs. But I'll just reiterate what Pastor Stocker just referred to. He argues that, okay, we don't know how old the Earth is and the universe, but you know, he tends to support an old Earth position, but you know, sort of weekly. And I enjoyed the conversation, and I hope he'll consider some of the arguments that he was presented with. But he said there are arguments against the standard old Earth position. And what are those arguments against it? He said, well, first of all, that we find fossils that have soft tissues in them. And here at Bob and Yurt Live, we've done shows on the soft tissue T-Rex found up in Montana. And you could just Google on the internet, search for soft tissue T-Rex, and you'll find photographs of the tissue. Reuters photographs on MSNBC. You could go to our website, kgov.com, or just Google, just search on the internet for Enyart, E-N-Y-A-R-T, and T-Rex. That's it. T-Rex. And you'll find it immediately. And you could see all the fascinating information about a T-Rex skeleton with soft tissue in it, with structures, pliable structures. These bones of these dinosaurs, they smell like cadavers, according to the scientists who dig them up, excavate them. And there are structures that look like blood vessels, and they got hemoglobin in there. It's just extraordinary. And then they're finding protein molecules in other fossils and bacteria and even living bacteria. And this is in fossils that are supposedly tens of millions and hundreds of millions of years old. So that is all overwhelming evidence against the theory of billions of years. And John Stocker points that out, and I'm glad that he does. And also polystrate fossils, that we have trees that stand upright through many layers of strata, sometimes through, let's say, 50 layers of strata, one tree. Now, if that strata takes millions of years to form, then they want us to believe that this tree was standing there for millions of years as the strata was forming? Of course that wouldn't happen. So that's evidence against the millions of years of strata formation theories. Like recently, a news account nationwide about fossilized jellyfish found in the Midwest in a quarry. The quarry's operating. They're digging through strata. And they said, stop the shovel, stop the shovel. They found jellyfish, which jellyfish don't have hard parts to their bodies. So it's more rare to find jellyfish fossils than clam fossils, for example. Well, the fascinating thing is this. They found these jellyfish all like swimming in a pack. And they were in multiple layers in a quarry. And according to geologists in the area, those layers were said to have been laid down over a million years. About 1 million years, those layers that all these jellyfish happened to be caught up swimming like in a school of jellyfish. Okay, so that shows us that it's not true. It didn't take millions of years. Polystrate fossils and jellyfish and so on. Just look at the Grand Canyon, the perfectly even strata for as far as the eye can see. And we could tell that there were not millions of years of erosion, wind and water, to make all the layers between the strata irregular, because there are so many areas where the strata is perfectly uniform. All right. So I want to tell you about the Olive Branch Bookstore in Arvada, Colorado. They sell our materials, Bob and Yart Live. That's at 64th and Ward Road. You could go in and say hi to Helen. That's the Olive Branch Bookstore, 64th and Ward, and then Maranatha Christian Center in Arvada. What a great school, Maranatha. In our Age of the Earth debate, get it at kgov.com or call us at 800-8-NYART. May God bless you.